and a happy new year.
I've just banged everything at all the same time.
Yes.
That music was selected for our guest.
Great.
I feel so special and so tough.
You are. You're both of those things. I've played this old Armored Saint cassette before on the show as a beginning entry music. But this particular song on the record sounded like triumphant and royal, like a visiting dignitary had entered our home.
Or an and archangel of doom?
I believe that this is what we have today. We have a visiting dignitary.
Slash archangel of doom.
Slash archangel of doom. Already she has told me that I'm great at baking cookies, because I made cookies.
You did, and they're really good.
She got chocolate chip on her forehead.
Which is pretty amazing.
And told us about her new boyfriend, and then also about the old boyfriend that wasn't good enough for
Yes.
I like to call the chocolate on the forehead the mark of the beast.
So it's been a full day already. We haven't even started the show yet. We haven't introduced ourselves or the show yet. But welcome, Amy Nicholson of LA Weekly. We're thrilled to have you here for the first time.
It's great to be here, Dave and Alonzo, and your cookies.
And this is Linoleum Knife, a podcast on the cinema. Of, for, about, and through the cinema. I'm Alonzo Duraldi, film critic for TheWrap.com and the YouTube series What the Flick.
Sorry. I'm Dave White. I am the film critic for Movies.com. And Amy Nicholson is the boss lady of the LA Weekly.
Lady's a kind word. Thank you.
Yes. The boss. You're the boss.
Kind of.
You tell other people what to do.
Actually, no.
You tell them to write things.
No, I don't.
Oh, you don't?
Yeah, I'm low on the... Well, I am the main writer person who gets told to write things.
Oh,
but it's kind of nice. I get to farm off the hard work on my editors, who are wonderful. Alan Schurstel, New York.
Wait, aren't there other critics, though? Don't you, like, have, like, control of them? Don't you say, go do this?
No, at all. Wouldn't that... I mean, it would be awesome. Then I'd be even more powerful, but...
Maybe I shouldn't have played this visiting dignitary music.
We can just pretend it only means my evilness.
What kind of charlatan are you, faker?
No, it's great. I get to only be the nice guy since I don't control anybody else's work.
Perfect then.
Oh, that is good. Yeah. Alonzo is now the review editor.
It's true.
Over at The Wrap.
Yeah.
So he gets to fob things off on people that he doesn't want to do.
It's not so much that I don't want to do them, but there are times that I think...
If other people feel more right for them.
Yes, or, that it would, they're very big about a woman's voice, so, I try and make sure that... Ella and our upcoming critic who is about to start soon,
Still not yet to be named?
We're not naming it yet, no.
Okay. Oh,
man, I
want
to know.
We'll tell you off the mic.
I'll tell you. It's
a coup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I kind of don't believe it until I get a piece of copy from her. But we're very excited about that. Anyway, so I will, or if it's things where there's some conflict of interest, I obviously, as we discussed when Jack Morrissey was here, I didn't think I should have reviewed The Fifth Estate, so I didn't. But now, for the most part,
that was a whole lot. That was like
I shoulder the load.
That was
a bro
situation. You couldn't do that.
I know. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is super fascinating to everyone, I'm sure.
Did you know? I just learned from the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Ice Cube. This is Gray just tweeted. Gray just put this on Facebook. Ice Cube confirmed today. At the ride-along junket, that members of NWA flew Northwest Airlines exclusively because their name was already on the side of the plane.
Are you serious? I have an aunt who was an airline stewardess for Northwest Airlines. She's got to tell me some stories.
Does that mean
they couldn't travel anywhere but Michigan?
Seattle? No, when I go to Seattle and I see baggage carts with NWA on them, I immediately think, Northwest Airlines. Yikes.
There's barely any movies out today.
Yeah, there's only a couple new ones, but...
As opposed to last week when Drew was on.
Right, we had the wheelbarrow of films. And we didn't even do all of them because you forgot to talk about Believe.
Drew, Chloe Sevigny is mad at Drogi.
She just wants publicity.
I know. We had talked about nine movies. The podcast lasted over an hour and a half. It was very lengthy.
Which one of you guys had to crack the whip on time?
Well, we just zipped through it as much as we could. This week all we've got is Paranormal Activity, The Marklands, yes, and Interior Leather Bar.
Which isn't even a full-length feature.
Right, but first we have to circle back, and you have to talk about Justin Bieber's Believe, because you did see the thing, and we forgot to talk about it.
First of all, Matt, my movie pal Matt and I, who up until this moment had been our relationship had been very pure up until this moment. We were only going to see
Claire Denis
art film. Right. And so, and I was really sort of happy to keep it that way. But then I said, I have to go see Justin Bieber's Believe. And he's like, I want to go. And I said, I don't know that I can soil you like this. Like, I think maybe
we don't have that kind of
relationship. You should stay my pretty, pretty flower, you know. but then he was like, no, I want to go. So I made sure that we went to the worst place of all to see it. To the Burbank Mall.
Wait, in the mall?
In the mall.
Ooh, that one's even, though, that is the worst.
Remember when we saw Megiddo?
The Omega Code 2? I'll never forget it. Yeah. We were the only ones there not holding a Bible.
I know, it was pretty great. So we go there on the morning after Christmas Day.
You and all the people looking for sales.
But you know what's great about the Burbank Mall is that there's a Cinnabon there, and also a hot dog on a stick.
I heard about Cinnabon and Walter Mitty. I heard it's really good.
It's really good.
And you can sign Cinnabon. up for eHarmony while you're having one.
Cinnabon is so delicious.
And then go have lunch at Papa John's.
I tried to sign up for eHarmony and I got rejected. You fill out the whole survey, it takes you an hour, and they're like, you're not ready for us.
What?
Yeah.
You're kidding.
No, I'm very serious. This is like 2007.
You're not ready for this?
I wasn't then. They could see right through me.
You weren't ready for their e-jelly?
I wasn't ready for their e-Christian men.
Okay, so...
But you go there and you get all the good food is there.
Yeah, clearly. Why leave?
The best thing about the Burbank 8, the Burbank Mall, I think it's called the Burbank Media Center.
I think it might be the Media Center.
I think maybe the name of the mall, right?
Which you'd think would be
I think it's the Burbank... No, that's Encino Town Center.
Yeah, no, it's the Burbank Media Center, which makes it sound like it's a production facility, but it's a mall.
Okay. So, it's kind of a... It's now officially borderline a sort of janky mall.
Mm.
Over half of the units in the mall are these mom-and-pop kind of stores.
Ooh.
They're not chain. Like, everything in a big, fancy mall is a chain.
Right. It's the
dirt. Is it that thing where their flagship is now a TJ Maxx?
Their flagship is Macy's, which is, you know, it's fine. Macy's is fine. But, you know, they have a Sears, and they have a... Something, I don't know what else.
Well,
they have.
And
a Kohl's, maybe.
They've definitely got a Claire's Boutique. I don't even have to go there. Maybe.
And AMC puts all their love in the big 16 screener that they have, like a block away, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm sure the 8 is just sort of the redheaded stepchild.
Well, here's what's great.
The Burbank AMC Cinemas.
The jewel in the crown of the Burbank Media Center is a women's dress shop called Magnifique Mademoiselle.
Ooh.
Whoa.
And their logo is a tiger. coming out of the G, like at you. And in their window are a lot of gowns that I know smell like the dry cleaners in Safe. And
wasn't that like a Project Runway thing? It looked like the kind of thing you'd buy at a store called Razzle or something.
There were these floor-length sort of prom gowns in the window, all wrapped in cellophane, like completely shrouded in whatever plastic bag they sell it in.
Mm.
And in the sign, the window, there's a sign that says, Golden Globe and Academy Award gowns here. Make your order today.
I'm sold. We've got the Lavender benefit next week.
And so I'm really happy we have you on the podcast today, because I want you to go get your award season gown.
Something truly magnifique.
Send your stylist over there and see what he comes up with.
I will. Pepe! Are you taking notes?
This is very important to me, Amy Nicholson. I really think that you need to dress at Mademoiselle.
I will find a floor-length yellow dress that makes me look like a fancy banana. And I'll do that just for you.
I've had this in my head over a week, and I've just been thinking about you and this place the whole time.
I don't quite know how to feel about that.
You should feel good about that, because mostly I'm thinking about jelly donuts.
It's true.
What if I got a dress printed with yellow jelly donuts? Would that just sort of be like the ultimate? What if the jelly in the jelly donuts was made of rhinestones?
What if? See, but then if you did that, it might look like Pharrell was dressing you. And that would really just ruin everything.
Or it was a Simpsons-themed gown somehow.
Yeah. It's true. We already have nostalgia for Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Right. I think that's the kind of gown you get at Magnifique.
Mademoiselle. Okay.
Now, if I had a phone that did this sort of thing properly,
you'd have taken pictures.
I'd have taken a better picture. I took a picture, but it didn't. Oh. It was just tiny and dark. And,
wait, you know, so. 2014, you were getting a smartphone.
I know.
So wait, what do you think the over-under is on Amy Adams wearing a dress from Magnifique to the Golden Globes?
Well, it could happen, and here's why. Yesterday, this friend of mine found her in a supermarket.
It's true.
And forced her into a picture.
What? Really?
Yes.
We just happened to have an Amy Adams anecdote ready to go from yesterday?
We have a friend who is like the celebrity whisperer. His Facebook page.
He sees them in public. He descends on them.
And charms them.
And somehow makes them take a picture of it. He's actually, you know, like, fascinating in terms of his skill in making this happen.
Because he's tall, but he's got like a sweet face, and yeah. I think he just charms them into it. And it's staggering, because most people, you know, in Los Angeles won't ever go anywhere near the celebrities, you know. And this guy just marches right up and then shares it with the world. And it's like, I have to admire that kind of
conversation. He is my behavioral opposite in public, and that is why I like him.
Yes.
Because I admire, on some level, that kind of...
He's got moxie.
Yeah. That kind of... And Amy Adams is in this picture going... Which is, you want her to be a little uncomfortable in the supermarket. Like, you know, she went home and was like, yeah, I'm never going back to the supermarket again.
What was she wearing?
Personal, like sweats or something, you know.
Like a North Face windbreaker, yeah, or something, you know, nothing.
They all do it, though. They all go to the supermarket.
No matter
who they are, they all go. At least once, like, if their assistant's not working or, you know, they decide... You know, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm just going to run out and get some chips.
I'm just going to run out and get
coconut water.
Coconut water. And boom.
I mean, that's impressive. It makes me think of when George Bush Sr. had never seen that grocery stores have the automatic checkout light thing.
Yeah.
So that just means that he's still more important than Amy Adams.
Right.
Sad reminder. In your face, Amy Adams.
It was like when Oprah and Gail took their road trip.
And she didn't know how to do the gas station.
And she didn't know how to pump gas. And then she also said, and then we went and bought food at a store called Albertsons. I'm sorry. Everyone else knows that the store is called Albertsons. Oprah.
In fact, they probably buy a lot of spots locally for your show.
So,
So you saw a movie in there somewhere, right?
Oh, yeah. Then we saw the movie. And
I can see the movie really took a hold in your imagination.
The movie was necessary for Justin Bieber to make, because he has found his penis. And because he has found his penis, he likes to touch it a lot. He's frequently touching his penis on stage in this film.
Like Michael Jackson style?
Yeah. It's a move. It's definitely a move in this sort of like, I'm being Michael Jackson. I'm being Michael Jackson at that stage in his career when no one could do a thing to him. He could do whatever he wanted. Mm-hmm. No consequences. Grab the junk in front of thousands of people, and everyone thinks you're just provocative.
And do the little girls scream when he does it?
They scream anyway.
Oh, well, that's
like,
true.
There's no sort of differentiating.
But did it sound like the screams were more out of confusion of how they felt on the inside?
Oh, yes.
I was 13 and he was grabbing his man bits in front of me. I wouldn't know how to feel about that, especially when I have my mom with
They're
me
confused.
As my chaperone.
And they haven't yet learned.
The Jonas Brothers used to spray foam on their audiences. That's right. All I'm saying.
It's the scream of a child who has not yet learned how to be sexually agonized about something, just sort of baffled. And that's a different scream. The sexual agony scream is more specific and contingent on an act. This is nonstop screaming. This is screaming that never lets up and never varies. It's just sort of a wall of scream. Whether he's touching his junk or sprouting angel wings or, you know, bringing the 6-year-old terminally ill girl up on stage and, you know, petting her on the head. It's all the screaming is all the same.
Well, I mean, I'm curious because I agree with what you're saying, that it sounds like he's doing this to prove his point that he is the new Michael Jackson, mm-hmm. and he's doing it younger than Michael Jackson right. was at the time that Michael Jackson was grabbing his junk. Mm-hmm. But at both of their junk grabbing stages, despite the gap in age, who do you think has had more sexual experience?
Bieber.
I think I'm going to agree.
Because yeah. he had Selena Gomez.
Right.
There was no virginity going on in that relationship. Not one bit. They were taking little vacations together when they were 17.
They were going on spring breaks.
Alone. They were, yeah, they were not. Mm. There might have been a tutor around. Hey, it's GED time, but that was like 20 minutes a day.
Yeah.
That's the rest of the time was steady boning.
That's like back when Britney Spears was living with Justin Timberlake, the period where they were both wearing matching Canadian tuxedos and going to award shows. Those and they're living so together, great. And she's like, so I'm still a virgin. We just have a house together right. in Florida.
in the heat of sticky Florida.
By the swamps.
Yeah, they were sitting around reading Flannery O'Connor to each other all day down in Florida.
And Carl Hyacin.
Yeah, yeah. So Bieber is doing damage control with this movie that no one is seeing. And the damage control is about, you know, this alleged misbehavior on his part. And if you break it down and you enumerate the misbehaviors that he's participated in the past year, they are garden variety college freshman sort of antics. You know, swearing in public. Pushing a guy who called him a name, peeing on something.
Saying something stupid about Anne Frank.
Saying something stupid about Anne Frank. The end. And you know he didn't know who Anne Frank was until he got to that house. Guarantee you. No,
you don't think GED tutor might
have? No idea who Anne Frank was until he got to that house. Here's why I think that. As the producer of this film, it's his own production company, and he's listed, credited, along with Usher as a producer. He allows this, quote, to be in the film. He is talking about his creative process. And he says, if I'm not happy, and the, you know, with the sound or the levels or the, you know, the way things are going or the professionalism, blah, 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 then I'm not happy.
A equals A.
Yes. But listen to yourself. He does not listen to himself. Here's what celebrities need. Now that we live in a world where celebrities are always talking, and we can hear them and talk back to them on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, they need continuing education consultants. They need someone by their side to say, here's what you think about this current event. Here's a quick, the president has this thing. Why don't the celebrities have it? Beyonce have one?
A social media filter where the celebrity whispers the thing in the social media filter's ear and then filter types it onto Twitter and Facebook in coherent sentences that make sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, every two-bit Texas beauty queen is groomed to give a safe answer to any question.
Yeah. Mm.
So where are these guys going awry?
Yeah, they're not consulting. They're not hiring the consultants they need. They hire stylists. They hire trainers. They hire nutritionists. They hire shrinks. They need to hire smartitude people to make them not be dumb. To make them not be dumb. To be the person who's allowed to say, you sound like an idiot right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, if even like Kraft can hire people to run their Twitter...
Yeah,
these people should be doing that. These people could be at least on the level of Kraft money.
Yeah,
I agree. SpaghettiOs.
Yeah.
So here's what he comes off as: a very talented young man who is perfectionistic about making music, and who wants to be taken seriously as a grown up. The whole movie should just be called "I'm This Many." Like, there's no other reason for this film to exist other than to make the fans happy, but the fans aren't going to see the movie.
Amy,
it's tanking.
Can you name a Justin Bieber song recorded since the first movie?
Oh, you've got me, because I was just going to say the only one I know, which is Baby, Baby, Baby.
That's the one I know, too.
Same here. That's all I got.
Well, since this movie is called Believe, I'm going to guess he has one called Believe.
He has one called Believe.
All right.
Good one.
Deductive reasoning.
I did not make that leap, but you're correct, I think.
If it was the Cher one, if he was covering that, I would have definitely been
that
bumping that all summer.
That'd be great. Yeah.
That'd be awesome. That's a really good song.
It is a great song. All right, so we're done talking about
that. Okay, fine. We'll do a quick run through on interior.
Oh, here's one great thing. Speaking of music,
yes.
Movie friend Matt is obsessed with Kylie Minogue.
Oh, you don't say.
Yeah, that's actually how we met. I'm wearing my Kylie Minogue T-shirt right now.
Oh yeah, he went to that fashion police taping, right?
Oh my God, this is the first time I haven't seen you wear a metal shirt, and there's a Kylie Minogue shirt.
Kylie Minogue shirt. I'm wearing it right now. She's a showgirl. And so we met. The day we met was at a taping of Fashion Police, where she was the guest.
Mm-hmm.
And our friend Tony, who is Joan Rivers's, you know,
he's the head writer,
right hand dude, he got us in. And so he was excited, and we were talking about, you know, why we were both there, and I was like, I like Kylie. And he's like, I love her. And it turns out...
I really like Santa.
It turns out that he really likes Santa. Like, I told him, when he handed me this gift bag on the day after Christmas, I looked inside the gift bag to find a handful of Kylie Minogue remix CDs that he had personally made for me. So great. And I said, you're a deadhead. Like, you're like a deadhead. Like, you, one of the CDs was all B-sides and rarities. I didn't know there were any. I was like, I'm just a jerk fan of Kylie Minogue. Like, I just think she's nice and happy. And he's serious. He's a scholar.
He's taping out of the soundboard.
Yeah.
Wow, it's like, so like Kylie Minogue unplugged or something?
Yeah.
What is she doing that's rare?
I don't know. I haven't listened to those CDs yet. I've gone two into the set. But I was so happy.
Collaboration with Diamante.
It was my only handmade Christmas gift this year.
Yeah.
Besides foods. Yeah. The fudge that Shannon
does. Oh, yes. She made very nice fudge.
All right. Next movie.
Okay. Oh, no. We got an onion confit from Kevin and Michael.
Mm-hmm, true. No. That was from your sister.
No. They also gave us like...
No. That was just grilled onions.
Oh, it was an onion something.
Pickled in a jar. Not the confit.
Sorry. Forgive me.
Get it right.
So sorry. Anyway, so Interior Leather Bar opens limited this weekend. I saw it at Sundance last year. Amy saw it at South by Southwest at 1 o'clock in the morning.
1 o'clock in the morning. I had to interview James Franco and then walk as he introduced the movie at 1 o'clock in the morning. The guy's tired.
I saw Bridesmaids at midnight at South by Southwest right after seeing Paul, and... Bridesmaids started at midnight, and that movie's a full 2 hours. So afterwards, forget getting a cab. Anyway, Interior Leather Bar. The stated premise of the film is that they're going to recreate the alleged 40 minutes that were cut from Cruising in 1980 so that William Friedkin could get an R rating from the MPAA. But it rather quickly emerges that's really not what this movie is about. It's sort of about people making that movie, but what happens to them over the course of them doing it. And it's Franco working with Travis Matthews, who directed a film that I liked a lot last year called, or 2 years ago now, sorry, called I Want Your Love, which was a sort of indie queer drama that happened to have super explicit sex scenes in it. And I thought...
Not just explicit sex scenes, the actors were really having sex with each other.
Is that not clear?
Explicit sex is different than real sex.
Okay, you're right, yeah. So, none of this...
Let's be clear on what it was.
None of this blue is
real
the...
Real sex.
None of this blue is the warmest color...
Prosthetic vaginas.
Yeah. No. This was the deed.
That's what I hear. That's the reported information.
Wow.
That's what they told
they
me.
It looked real to me. Didn't that those look like real vaginas to you?
You know, I didn't get around to watching it.
Well,
there's some vaginas. Really,
there's a lot of vaginas in this.
Yeah, if this is anything like some sort of
They're big, right up on screen.
Well, suffice it to say, there's not a single vagina in Interior Leather Bar. But there is man parts and more actual boning going on. Much of it while we see James Franco standing feet away from it with a video camera.
I think that's great.
and it kind of winds up being a movie about sort of Franco talking about the fear of images of gay sex because, like, you know, he actually uses the term heteronormative. You know, he talks about how every toilet paper ad has a, you know, a loving man, male-female couple, you know, but that images of two men together freak people out. And then also there's this actor named Val Lauren, thank you, who has worked with Franco in other films. He played Sal Mineo in his Sal movie. And he basically is playing the role of Al Pacino as the undercover cop in Cruising. And what I thought the most interesting thread of the movie was I had never really thought about the fact that, you know, Cruising is about a straight New York cop who has to go undercover in the gay leather world and how that affects him. It never dawned on me that Pacino himself had to go through that same road because, you know, he was going to those actual clubs that were in existence at the time, and all the extras were people who normally went to those clubs to do this movie. So it was kind of like,
and those guys were really getting it on in those background scenes.
Yeah, apparently so, according to people who were there, and that's what's happening in this movie. and so, I mean, it's structured like a documentary. It's obviously a narrative, but through Val's eyes, we sort of see the journey that Al Pacino had to go on, in addition to Al Pacino's character. And so I thought that was kind of cool. It's maybe a little academic, but I found it really compelling and interesting. But then I'm a gay dude, so what was your take?
Well, I found it interesting, but I'm not sure if I found it interesting for reasons that are actually in the film.
Uh-huh.
Because one thing that I thought was interesting is, you know, the entire film, at least half the cast, from what I remember, seems to also be like straight actor dudes who are participating in these orgy scenes and learning about what to emulate and how to do it. And the reason most of them kept giving for why they were there is because of James Franco's involvement.
Right.
And so I found this interesting as sort of a study of the James Franco brand. You know, James Franco brands himself doing this kind of small throwaway short, like you said, not even a feature-length movie.
Mm.
And what can the James Franco brand convince people to do?
What would you do for a Klondike bar?
Yeah, what would you do for a Klondike bar? What would you do for an IMDb credit that also has James Franco? And I mean, to me, that seems like the harder stuff got on Val. Because Val, my heart kind of went out to Val. I couldn't tell if Val was actually super awkward about like having to do gay acts on camera.
He's playing the role of a guy who feels awkward about it. I mean, there's even times where, like, there's moments that you think you're watching sort of documentary footage, and then, like, Travis or Franco will come in and say, okay, could you say it again, or could you, now you want to convey this. It's like, oh, so this isn't, so I mean, when I say that Val is in this doing this, I mean, he is playing himself in quotes the way that Franco is, and to an extent even Travis Matthews is.
Exactly, that's what I would like to think, because since it's framed as a documentary, he runs the risk, I think if anything nowadays, it's more of a risk to have people think you might be awkward about doing gay scenes than it is to actually do the gay scenes.
Well, but it's one thing when you have, like, what's his face? Miles Teller giving that interview about 21 and over, about, I had to kiss a boy, you know, for 2 seconds. Which I think does annoy people. I thought after Queer as Folk, like, everybody got the memo that you couldn't give that interview anymore. But it's something else when it's, you know, you're surrounded by dudes in harnesses and in a sling. It's like, okay, if you're a straight guy and you're uncomfortable with that, I'm willing to give you that. You know, there's a lot of gay guys that would be uncomfortable in that scenario. So, you know,
that's true.
As for gay actors, would be uncomfortable being in a movie about suburban swingers or whatever, say, and there were, you know, like, there was hetero sex and the shag carpeting all around you, you know.
That's true. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs and I'd be probably weird in a room full of suburban swingers.
Yeah, probably.
Probably. You think? But who knows? I'm young.
Hypothetically speaking.
Who knows how I'll feel when I'm, you know, 65 and a little restless.
Living in Orange County.
But I think
being
it's a
lifestyle.
I think it's a movie worth seeing. If you are familiar with Cruising, so much the better. But I don't think you have to be familiar with Cruising to dig it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I'm not one of those people who thinks that Franco needs to stop creating things. I love the fact that Franco has so much energy that in a weekend when you and I might just like make a lasagna, he will make this film and this film will go to Sundance.
Yeah, right.
I admire his energy. So even though I don't, on a, it could be the 1 a.m. thing. It could be the pacing of the film. I remember falling asleep a little bit. But it's a movie that I'm glad exists.
Yeah, as part of the ongoing James Franco art project, I think it's an interesting chapter, you know.
I like that he's as famous as he is and as weird as he is.
Exactly.
I'm a fan of that.
The day that I saw this was the day that they came out with the first box office numbers for The Great and Powerful Oz. So it's like, hi, I'm James Franco. I woke up and opened a paper and my movie made $100 million. And now it's 1 a.m. and I'm in Austin and let's talk about cruising.
Right.
Yeah, well, when he was at Sundance, like the Oz was about to come out, you know, and he was like wearing this really ridiculous sort of Christmas sweater at the screening. And it was like, yeah, I've got a Disney movie coming out and I've got this other like hardcore porn documentary kink that I'm showing, that I produced at showing at Sundance. Oh, and I've got Spring Breakers. I mean, it's just like, and that was just a snippet of the gajillion things he produced in 2013. So you know, so the big,
and now CineFamily's showing them both.
Yeah, yeah. CineFamily's running.
So I want to go because I always love watching Cruising. I can't watch Cruising enough times. I know I shouldn't like it, apparently. Like, there are two schools of thought. I know that there are some older gay activists is the wrong word, but, you know, film people who remember who were adults when Cruising came out and what a terrible moment that was.
Right.
And how like, exploited they felt. But at the same time, I think history has changed how that movie can be read.
Right. Well, and I mean, I remember being mad about Basic Instinct in 1991, but again, it was because...
Yeah, but you were wrong.
But I wasn't wrong in 1991, because the point is...
No, see, dude, because I was in 1991, too, when Basic Instinct came out, and that movie is dope.
No, I enjoyed the movie when it came out. I'm talking about beforehand, because as with Cruising, there was a lot of protests about it while it was being shot and before it came out. And what a lot of that had to do with was cultural context. It's right. Like, if queers are going to be invisible on the big screen, and then this one big movie comes out where the lead bisexual character is also an ice pick murderess, it's like, you know, nowadays...
But a really cool one.
Yeah, absolutely right. Very
but
cool
if
one.
You're like, and hey, what are the ratio of good people to bad people who are bisexual characters this year in 1991, and it's 100% bad.
Right. Exactly, yeah. And so, like, now that there is more...
Now there's more
of a mix on the screen, we can look back at Sharon Stone in that movie and go, oh, yeah, she was a ride-on lady taking care of business. You know, but you didn't have that cultural context at the time. I think it's a totally valid read to look at Cruising now and to say, okay, as part of now that we have sort of a multifaceted quilt of queer representation in American movies, yes, this is an interesting story to be told. And, you know, and of course now it has a sort of what I call the ethnographic quality of it. You know, you've got this tribe of New York, you know, sexually active gay men who were then decimated over the following decade.
Yes.
You know, you have a neighborhood that used to be, you know, dark and sleazy that is now condos.
Right.
You know, I'm sure one day I'll be able to look at Dallas Buyers Club, I hope, and not think about the fact that, oh, wow, we get one AIDS movie in 20 years and it's about this unicorn, straight, homophobe, white guy who got drugs for people. Yippee. You know?
Yeah.
So it's all about context.
Correct. I'm gonna see Interior this week.
Yeah. No. I think you'll find it interesting.
Yeah.
So the big release this weekend
is. How are the boners in that movie? Are they good boners?
They're kind of indie boners.
All right.
But I thought the sex scenes in it were sort of affectionate. It was a lot of couples.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's
that's boring.
There's eye contact, you know. but they
affection.
But they go for a certain level of, like, you know, leather milieu. So, you know, there's a little of everything.
Affectionate indie boners. That'll kill your boner. Right
bah. There. The big release this weekend, of course, is Paranormal Activity: The Marked Ones.
Yes.
Why don't you talk about it since you love it so much? Why don't you marry it?
They're saying that this is not a sequel. It's like a reboot or a spinoff or
an offshoot.
Something an offshoot, but it's a sequel. I mean, it's it's tied right into the stories that have been happening in the first four movies.
It is canon.
Yeah, it includes people from those other films in ways I will not divulge. But it's set in a different. It's set in Oxnard instead of Carlsbad.
Or
Moor Park. Well, Carlsbad was the second.
Oh, okay.
Part two, yeah.
It's about time Oxnard had its say on screen.
Represent.
Yeah. And apparently one of the city council people in Oxnard is like, I don't know why they decided they had to make this movie be in Oxnard. What did Oxnard do? You know? I'm like, well, you were Oxnard. That's why. Yeah. And
San Berdu said no.
Right. So it's three kids who live in a dumpy apartment building. They think that there is a witch living in their building.
Guess what? They're right.
They cross her, unfortunately, and she says to them in Spanish, "You don't know what's about to happen to you." And what does happen?
But we know what's about to happen. Yeah.
But what happens to them would have happened had they never spoken to her or dealt with her in any way.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the crossing her just gave her a moment to tell them. By the way,
guess what?
Guess what's happening? I've had you marked since you were in your mother's womb. And
boom goes the dynamite.
Yeah. So so one of them wakes up with a mark on his forearm,
and some
cool superpowers. Mm-hmm. He can levitate. In a jocular way.
He can make a speak and spell talk to him.
He can make a Simon. Yeah, he make the Simon game
It'd
talk
be
to him.
It'd be easier to make a speak and spell talk.
And yeah, that's how much of a job. Like, I could do that.
And my favorite thing, he can take bad cholo dudes and throw them in the air.
Oh, yeah.
Which is hilarious.
And, of course, somebody's holding a camera the whole time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Someone has a camera. Which is how I have decided the evil demon picks its victims. By their camera. Like, it has to eat the camera.
It needs documentation.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a good point. I mean, it's like the tree falling in the woods. Like, if a guy is haunted by a demon and nobody's recording it, won't the demon just be like, eh?
Yeah, what am I bothering for? This isn't good PR. No one's here. No one's watching. Yeah. So,
this is a faulty launch.
So, this is essentially, it's another Paranormal Activity movie. They do things that the Paranormal Activity people do. They investigate trap doors in darkened apartments. They shouldn't do that. No one should do that, ever. No one should ever do that, and they do that all the time. They go places they shouldn't go. They look for things they shouldn't look for. They find them. And it's too late anyway. It's not like they need to go hunting for this stuff, because it's inside one of them, just like it was inside the people in numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4. I don't want to give too much more away, because there's a lot of fun stuff in this. There are fun little twists. There are fun surprises. There are enough jolts that I jumped and yelled at a couple moments in the movie, which is hard to make me do, because I'm always sort of braced for that in a horror movie. I'm a big horror fan, and so I don't jump or yell easily, and this took me by surprise in just a couple moments.
There were moments that I didn't, and I think I would have previously, and I don't know if it's that I finally sat through enough of these movies to kind of, okay, it's real quiet, all right, any minute now, not gonna lose it when it happens, oh, and there it happened.
Exactly, you know? I spend those periods watching it with my hands half over my face, so I can see like little strips of the screen, because I know it's gonna pop out, and I hate the pop out.
My thing with this is,
I like the pop out. I'm a big fan of the pop-out. Like, I want the pop-out to beat me. You know, like, I don't want to win against the pop-out, and I always do, because I know it's coming, because I can feel the beat. Silent, 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 silent. One beat too long, silent, if you're next, which was a great move on their part. And then it pops out at you, but if you can get me, then you win, and you're better than I am. That's a game I play with the horror movie.
This one was okay. I mean, you know, it was last night. It felt like we were gonna have a big fight about this, but I think I liked it okay. I just you don't usually like to talk about movies after the movie's over.
And the first thing I said when we walked out was like,
"Oh my god, that was so great!" I'm like, "No, it wasn't that great.
It wasn't that great. I was excited.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm a little sick of the paranormal formula at this point, and it's a formula. Do not be fooled. If you are not, if you are still down for what these movies have to offer, you will have a good time at this one. I will say that, you know, mixing up the milieu helps some. It was interesting to get it out of the sort of those ticky-tacky suburban houses.
Exactly. All those doomed blonde girls. I was so tired of doomed blonde girls.
But I was kind of hoping they were going to do more with the Oxnard stuff. Like, when the grandmother goes to the, like, Santeria bodega to get, like, you know, the crazy...
The blood eggs.
I thought, oh, goody. I want a big showdown between, like, white suburban witches and Mexican mysticism. Like, that would be awesome. And they kind of dumped that role.
No, I really wanted that, too. Actually, as preparation, you guys don't know this about me this week, I went to 6 Santeria shops. Just to kind of like get a sense of them, because I thought this movie would have more Santeria in it, so I wanted to write about it. Dude, it was freaky. I mean, actually, the first one was bad. The next 5 are pretty good. But I'll tell you guys a quick Santeria story. I'll get it real fast.
No, tell. Yeah.
So I went to this
one. Don't be fast. Details, please.
I went to this one in East LA. Mm-hmm. And it's the weird thing about Santeria shops is they actually look pretty clinical. They try to have white walls. They try to make it very sparse.
Like the Ayurvedic store.
Exactly. And I met this guy named Pedro who was working there. And he said that what makes him better than all the other Santeria people is he really does have the power of dressing them. He's been doing Santeria for 50 years.
Whoa.
He's in his mid-60s now. So he's been doing it since he was a boy. So I bought the nicest candle that I had bought at any of the shops I went to. I got this $5 candle that was the 7x7 good luck from my boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Then I paid an extra $5 so he would take it to the back and add extra magic on it. Because I was going to be lighting this like right before midnight on New Year's to sort of give him a good 2014.
Good idea.
And then I take the candle home afterwards. I'm like really stoked on this. And as I'm getting out of my car, I dropped and broke it in my pavement of my driveway. And had kind of a freak out. So I called him the next day.
Some paranormal stuff is going to start happening to you. Exactly. Yeah.
I called Pedro the next day, and Pedro wasn't in, but this guy was in the shop running the phone. So he called Pedro on his cell phone. So I have this guy in the middle kind of running translator between
literally
me and Pedro.
Literally playing telephone.
Literally playing telephone. And he tells me that the candle that I bought from my boyfriend broke because an evil spirit doesn't want it lit. And that I have to go back and get a stronger candle. And I don't think I believe in this stuff, but I believe in it just enough. Probably going to do it because if anything bad happens, it's now my fault.
You don't want the chupacabra coming after you.
No.
Or the La Llorona. None of that.
None of that.
That stuff comes after you. You've had it.
As long as the new candle isn't more than like $20, sure,
it's
why not?
It's probably worth it, right?
Just in case.
You'd spend that much on a diptyque.
There you go.
Exactly. But I feel you. I wanted more Santeria stuff in this movie because I find that fascinating. And I love that the Paranormal Activity... I mean, we have to admit that this is kind of like tactically brilliant because I think it was like young Hispanic male teenagers that made Paranormal 4 a huge hit. I think they were, what, like 40% of the box office?
Yeah, demographically it makes sense. But I think also because the whole rest of the audience... There's no star of these movies. They're coming back for the franchise itself. So why not be like, all right, you'll come see this movie, whatever. We're going to make it all Latino this time. Cough exactly. up, white people. Spend your money on this. All of you who wouldn't go see, you know, Instructions Not Included or whatever on a bet, you know, you're going to come see this movie and boom, you know.
I loved all the inclusion of the sort of Southern California Latino culture stuff in it. Mm-hmm. Because it just feels like this fresh new thing for the franchise to play with. And
of course, Insidious Chapter 3 is also going to be all Hispanic,
right.
too, I think.
Oh, really?
Well, see, this is that's genius. What Chapter 2 yeah. sets you up for, yeah.
This is strategically brilliant on their part. Mm-hmm. And, it's probably... I know it's all about the dollars, but I'm glad they're doing it.
And you know, I'm glad they're doing it, too, because this really did, for me, add a sort of fresh feeling to the franchise. It felt invigorated again for me. In spite of the routine, you know, stuff that was happening, the comedy, the sort of low-key kind of comedy reminded me of stuff from Your Next. A lot of this film reminded me of Your Next in a way. That's definitely sort of like a more casual, loose approach to everything. And
Jorge Diaz,
the guy who played Hector, really Jorge great. Diaz, he takes the whole movie.
Yeah.
Because he's funny and kind of goofy, and there's this high spirited quality to him and the girl at first, Marisol, whoever plays her, until of course the screaming starts.
Right. But they're very charismatic and they kind of loop you into you know, you're not just sort of waiting for them to become, you know, witch meat.
And there's a great moment at the end. I won't spoil it, but it involves, you know, gangbangers, and it's so funny, so funny and so awesome, and the audience cheered.
And they got away from what I think has been killing the franchise, which is that it's been about, I'm a dude who set up cameras all over my house, and it's just these static shots. This one was actually kinetic, and it was moving.
Although sometimes, there were times when the camera got put down, I was like, oh, okay, yes.
Yeah, at least
30 seconds of not like being swung around in somebody's hand. That's going
to
be awesome.
Although I was kind of on the fence with this. I'd be curious to hear you guys' opinion. At a certain point in my head, I started playing like L.A. Mexican stereotype bingo, because you had the grandma doing tequila shots, you had the chihuahua, I mean, you had the gang member with the tattoos on his neck.
Right.
I was like, at what point is this real life, and at what point is this like becoming just sort of like cliche?
Right. Mm. I think that the movie knew that, because at odd moments, they would goof on it a little bit. And I think that the moment that I'm talking about where the audience cheered is kind of a goof on that. I think, you know, when he shows up wearing a t-shirt that says, I just look illegal. when he calls the other guy Sherlock Holmes, and he goes, Holmes, you know, like, get my joke.
Sherlock Holmes.
I think that stuff was obviously intentional and sort of tweaking with that stuff. So I'm a fan. I had a good time. It had just enough scares. It felt just fresh enough and progressive enough in the direction that a franchise ought to go.
Yeah,
if it's not going to stop, and it's not going to stop.
I wish they had changed the fundamentals more, but I at least appreciate that they changed the sort of surface stuff, you know. So that was at least enough to keep me interested. But I would have liked to see them be a little more daring in toying with the formula, because it's such a formula at this point.
I think the last act is always almost identical no matter who it is.
Right.
But and honestly, I wish they would just dump the canon. I think it's okay that they try to fold it into the canon, I guess. But at this point, I don't care anything more about the people from the first film. I just want to see these spirits.
Let's just move on.
Let's just open it up and get rid of them.
Okay, and let's move on from this and talk about top tens.
Where's my list?
I don't know.
Where's the link to the village voice? The village
the
voice.
Village voice.
Where's the village voice?
I don't know. Didn't you put it on your Facebook wall? I assume.
No.
Oh, God.
Y'all start talking. I'll find it.
Google Village Voice Critics Poll 2013.
So how do we want to do this? We want to start with the bottom and work up. Start at the top. Are we going to argue?
We'll start at 10 and work our way up, and I'm sure there will be arguments. I did not see Pain and Gain, but you will be called upon to defend its presence in your top 10 list. But
I will, Alonzo.
I'm sure you're capable. Start us at your what was your number 10, Amy?
Oh yeah, then you're not going to like this. It's The Secret Life of Walter Mitty,
which we just argued about last week.
I love Ben Stiller. I think if anybody else besides Ben Stiller had made this movie, we'd be taking it more seriously. I think he just gets kind of instantly written off. Because the main point that I would try to make in my review about Walter Mitty is I think people have a hard time distinguishing between Ben Stiller, the star of really, really stupid, bad comedies, and Ben Stiller, the director, who his last big film got Robert Downey Jr. an Oscar nomination. That's kind of crazy. I think the man has a gift.
I agree with you that his previous films as a director have been interesting. I don't agree with you that this is one of them. And I also think that directing himself was a big mistake, because the movie is so aggrandizing about Walter Mitty and how it treats him, that the fact that Stiller turns this movie into a commercial for himself, I found squicky. But, you know.
Well, if that's a commercial, I'm buying.
Fair enough. You clearly did. my number 10 was A Touch of Sin, which we discussed on the show. Extraordinary Chinese film for vignettes of people in desperate straits who turn to violence because of the horrifying economic conditions there and really everywhere. I think it's a movie that is super, super relevant to the times we live in, and kind of takes big, awful things and boils them down to a very human level, and was super intense, and I was enraptured.
I don't have an order. I put them in alphabetical order.
All right, we'll start from your...
And my list is not... See, here's... Okay, here's the thing. Like, my list is not really my list. I mean, it's part of my list. But for the Village Voice poll, I just sent in 10 movies that I thought were underloved. 10 that I thought were great. 10 that were my 10. They were 10 of my favorites. Mm-hmm. But like when I was on the Overnight America show this past week, I gave him 10 wide releases that I thought were really wonderful.
Why don't you do that list?
Well, I don't remember what that was because I just made it up on a napkin and then I threw it away. And I didn't link this. I didn't link this anywhere because they made a mistake. Somehow there's a typo in my thing where I said that one of my favorite supporting performances was Louis C.K. in The Wolf of Wall Street, which didn't, that did not happen. And so like, but I didn't write that. Like it just wound up that way.
All right,
I just,
Dave, do you want to play along with this or is it just going to be me and Amy?
Or you could be the arbiter and tell us on which number who's correct.
Yeah. All right, I'll give you what came up number 10. Like, I sent them an alphabetical list,
okay.
And they just ordered them any way they felt like ordering them.
That's so what we do with the Village Voice.
My number 10 was Upstream Color, according to the Village Voice poll.
Great.
Which is swell. But yours should have been number 1.
My Touch of Sin?
Yeah, because that's my actual number 1.
Well.
And and yours is great, because I like that movie.
You do?
Yeah. I'm a fan of Walter Mitty.
Let's give a loud audible
and
high five.
I don't like Ben Stiller unless he's directing. I don't like the Fockers. I don't like
Dodgeball.
Night at Museum.
One. Yeah, none of those.
None of the Night at Museum stuff. Like, in those films, when he's just acting, he comes off angry and starving and like too worked out, like he needs a sandwich, like the cheeks are sunky
and his lips are thinner.
He just seems unhappy and it makes me not like him. Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, he always seems like man with the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Yeah, he's like, I'm so mad. Christine Taylor won't stop shopping. You know, like there's just this.
But now he's an awesome skateboarder. Woo!
Right, yeah.
Okay, what's your number 9?
My number 9 was Drinking Buddies.
Nice.
I saw this film at South By actually as well, and it just really stuck with me. I didn't think I was a Swanberg fan before that. I'd kind of bagged on most of his films intermittently.
It's his best one.
It's absolutely his best one. I love a love story where you really think the main couple should get together, but you understand that not everybody gets what they want. Not everybody has the happiness you two have.
That's true.
Yeah, poor bastards.
We have a special situation going on.
Dave makes cookies.
What about you?
I keep him in chocolate chip cookies.
I like Drinking Buddies a lot. That was a good one. My number 9 was Concussion. I don't know if you saw it.
No, I didn't.
First time film from Stacey Passon. Premiered at Sundance last year. But
Lesbo Belle de Jour.
Yeah, basically, yeah. A little bit of Jean Dielman, a little bit of Stepford Wives, too. Housewife and mother in the suburbs, but happens to be a lesbian, gets beamed in the head by her son's baseball and decides that she's going to shake up her life a bit. She goes back to work as an interior designer, and so she starts renovating this loft in New York, and over the course of getting the loft all put together, she starts working as kind of a high-class escort, but she gets to approve the clients first.
Oh, good. That's always been the part that bothers me about being an escort.
Yeah. They have to meet for coffee first, and she gives them a yay or a nay. But it's a very cool movie about a middle-aged woman's sort of reawakening sexuality and kind of the questioning of her life priorities. And I think in the way that like Safe was and Separate Wives, I think it's a really smart film about sort of bourgeois women and the choices they're forced into and the ways they sort of, you know, break out of that shell when they can. It's an astounding movie. I just found it fascinating. And it's currently streaming on Amazon. It comes out on DVD at the end of January.
Spring Breakers.
Good one.
I have nothing new to say about it. Spring Breakers.
People, certain people yelled at me for not putting that on my top 10. I like it. I think it.
Who yelled? Name names.
James Franco?
James Franco
tell us
called
James
me up.
James Franco touched
like,
you.
What the hell? No. Our dear friend Malcolm Ingram, who's like to give me a hard time about having about what my number one movie is, also complained that I didn't put Spring Breakers in my top 10. I like Spring Breakers a lot. I think he does a lot of things really well.
When's Malcolm coming back to town? Let's put him on this show. I want to see you two duke it out.
I think he's going to Palm Springs with Continental, but I don't know if he's coming to L.A. or not.
That's just a 5 minutes away. You need to get over here.
Anyway, there's a lot that I like about Spring Breakers. I think it's not perfect, but I think there's good stuff in it. And it's the first Harmony Korine movie I liked.
I gave you the official Spring Breakers playing card
That's
set
right.
for Christmas.
With 52 different images.
Of
maybe 54
James
of the
Franco?
Jokers. Among other things. All these stills from the film. Huh.
It was right into your Christmas stocking.
Yep, he got
That's
it at opening ceremony.
On
proving
That's
once
wonderful.
Again that I'm great at the Christmas stocking.
Okay, well, what's your number eight?
My number eight was actually by another director who I kind of like intermittently, and that is Edgar Wright's The World's End.
Yay!
Wow.
That was in my top 25. Excellent movie.
Oh, good. This is embarrassing to say, but I have fallen asleep every time I've tried to watch Shaun of the Dead. I don't know what it is. There's something in my brain that just shuts off at the 45-minute mark. But I loved World's End. I didn't pass the I'm going to see this comedy twice in a week test, which is really hard. I think a lot of comedies fail the twice in a week test.
That's true. I usually don't even dare put them through that. But I could see where this one. I did see it twice, not in a week. But yeah, it totally holds up. What did you think about Hot Fuzz? Because that's the one I'm not so crazy about.
Yeah, Hot Fuzz I couldn't get into at all. I really like Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, no, I love Scott Pilgrim. I love Shaun of the Dead. Hot Fuzz, I think there's funny stuff, but it's also way too long. But World's End, I think, is genius. Simon Pegg. I wrote a thing about if I could pick one ringer per category at the Oscars this year, I would love to see Simon Pegg get a Best Actor nomination. It's not happening, but
I think Nick Frost in this movie is maybe my dream man. Like, he's always wearing a nice suit, those nice glasses. He's angry.
I like just the glasses a lot, Alonzo.
Thank you.
Just the right amount of fat, you know, and then he hulks out at the end all. Yeah. I was swooning quite a bit.
Terrific.
There is somebody for everybody.
Yeah.
That is an awesome movie. My number eight is Before Midnight.
Oh, yes.
I think really sharp, smart movie about long-term relationships and the stuff that couples are sort of endlessly, you know, dealing with. And like with World's End, my favorite of the trilogy for sure. I think the other two are interesting and they have their good points, but this is the one I think really that knocks it out of the park. And so good at making these little moments that felt so off the cuff and spontaneous when you knew they were like rehearsed and written like crazy. I mean, that like there's a long drive back from the airport that's just fascinating, and it's setting up all this plot stuff for later and character stuff for later, and it's just this extent like I don't know how long this one shot goes uninterrupted of just the two of them driving with the kids asleep in the back, and it's fascinating. So yeah, I love that one.
It's true, and I love the idea that it's a romance about people who actually know what it's like to already be in love with each other.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
Most movies end when they're like, all right, let's be together, and now it's like, okay,
then what? Yeah, totally,
right. Yeah, which is the whole, that was that whole, you know, what would you change about me?
Right.
Tomatoes. That would be what I would
change. What's your
want him to eat tomatoes. He doesn't like to eat tomatoes.
That's true.
Dude, I had a boyfriend for 3 years who wouldn't eat chicken.
Oh, God.
Lord, do you know how annoying that is?
Why did you keep him around?
Good question.
Other reasons.
Did he have a Reddit this week? No, I'm just kidding.
Something in the Air.
Ah, great one. That was my top 25.
The
Olivier Assayas.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
It's so great. It's just about the kids who were too young for May of 1968. And who, as was it 1971 the movie
I think
set?
So, yeah.
And they're in high school and they're like, yeah, revolution! And everyone else is like, just get over it. Yeah. And they get out of high school and then they go off and they all just sort of dissolve and fall apart. And it's sort of about like the compromises that you immediately begin making the moment you become
an adult.
Yeah. And it's just it's very, very affectionate and not judgmental and not mean, you know, to the idea of, you know, trading in a few of your ideals for something more easy to deal with, you know.
I would love to do a whole series of movies about 1968. I think there have been so many interesting ones, you know, The Dreamers and The Unbearable Lightness of Being and Medium Cool. And there was a French gay movie from a few years ago called My Super 8 Season that I really liked. Yeah. You know, I just think that's such a fascinating period. And May Fools, the way that people look back on it, the way that people were experiencing it in the moment, I think is really kind of cool. Okay, number seven.
My number seven is a documentary called Evocateur, the Morton Downey Jr. story.
I did not see that either. I saw the trailer at CineFamily, but...
It was so good. Do you guys remember Morton Downey Jr. from
the
80s?
Oh, yeah.
Crazy talk show host, kind of started the whole downward spiral of Jerry Springer's and people yelling at each other and shock TV. He took what was a kind of a polite medium up until then, the talk show where you talked about your problems. Mm-hmm. And turned it into complete trash talk. And then he pretty much self-destructed, said he got beat up by a Nazi in a bathroom. He was only on the air for 2 years. Wow. And just to go back and see this immediate rise and fall, and then to think about what his 2 years has done to the rest of us. You know, like, we're still living in his aftermath.
Interesting.
I just found it fascinating.
Oh, cool. Okay. And
I think they sent us a DVD. I mean,
oh, okay. All right, we should
check
it out.
It's worth a watch,
totally.
Guys.
Okay,
yes.
I will do that. My number seven was Enough Said.
R.I.P. James Gandolfini.
Exactly. I love Nicole Holofcener. She is one of my favorite directors, and she has made 5 movies in 17 years, which drives me crazy. I wish she could be like Woody Allen and making one every year, because she's amazing, and she really gets how people talk and how people behave toward each other, and she is as adept at telling L.A. stories as she is New York stories. And even though some people sort of accuse her films of being bougie or whatever, I mean, yes, often her characters are maybe of a certain socioeconomic level, but they're not of the same socioeconomic level, which is often a point of interest. And even if they are of that level, they still have interesting things going on inside that isn't about their, you know, white privilege or whatever. I think she's great, and this movie really allowed both Julia Louis-Dreyfus and James Gandolfini to play characters that were unlike what we're used to seeing from their sort of TV persona, and they were terrific. And yeah, it's Gandolfini's so wonderful in this. It was heartbreaking to watch. Like, I would lose myself his performance, and then I think, oh yeah, oh, you know. But it's a terrific movie. I really highly recommend it.
Absolutely, I think you're right. What's interesting about Nicole Holofcener is she makes films about the things we live in every day, but nobody makes films about. Right. About the little tensions when you know that your friend is better able to pick up a dinner tab.
Right.
Yes.
You know, and it's all just sort of there in the undercurrent. She never forgets that stuff.
Right.
I think it's incredibly smart. And every time I see a film, I wonder, why don't more people do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
I'm going to buy you a calorie book. That's our favorite thing to say to each other now. Because of that movie. She just says it out loud to him in one scene. I'm going to buy you a calorie book. And I was like, murder her right now. Die now. Yeah. But his response is so great. Like, oh, really? You're going to do that? Yeah, it's like, you're not even the third person to say that to me. You're like the 19th person to say that to me. That's how over that I am by people saying that stuff to me. Will you open that so we can have more light?
Sure.
The sun's going down. Sure. And we've got... It's turning into a cave in this room.
Oh, no. I'm going to take some more chocolate and become a marked woman.
Bastards.
Which I did not see.
Claire Denis, Bastards. 1 week at the Encino Town Center. You must go to the Encino Town Center to see so many films that never play anywhere else.
And have waffles.
Waffles. There's a waffle place right next to the Encino Town Center Lemley screening.
Guys, let's carpool next time.
Bastards is the new bummer from Claire Denis about a guy, Vincent Linden, who he's a sailor, and his brother-in-law has committed suicide. He's bankrupt, so he flies back to Paris to find his sister. She's distraught. Her daughter is in the hospital. She was injured during some kind of sexual assault. Vincent Linden moves into an empty apartment across in the same building as Chiara Mastroianni, and she's the wife of a very rich and powerful man who's Michel Suor, who's in all the Claire Denis movies. And he begins having sex with her. And you don't exactly know why, but you know there's some plan. And, like, he's going to get to the bottom of what happened to the brother-in-law and what happened to the sister's daughter. And then...
everyone's going to be miserable.
And then everyone is going to be in trouble. And Gregoire Cullen shows up because he's in all the Claire Denis movies. He was in Beau Travail. And he's like a pimp. And that figures into this, too. It's... the most doom-ridden film that I've seen all year.
She's got your number, that clear.
And, oh, man, she's perfect. Everything she does makes me so happy.
She's your Nicole Holofcener.
She is my Nicole Holofcener.
She makes you so sad, like, which makes you so happy.
Exactly, exactly. No, she makes me feel like humanity is completely bankrupt. And that fills me with pleasure.
My husband, I think I'll keep him. Amy, what's your number six?
I guess it's slightly more cheerful. Inside Llewyn Davis is what I put at six.
Awesome.
Which is a film I think I liked almost more for what wasn't happening in the film. You know, okay. The first time I watched Llewyn Davis and I had no idea what it was about, I just kept waiting for it to turn into a normal film. Where he did something where, like, all of a sudden he got discovered. And it was like, yay. And I was like, okay, so there's the rise in the film. And so I loved it for the torture I went through watching it the first time, being like... so full of suspense.
When does he get famous?
Yeah, when does he get famous? And the fact that he never did, and I just felt like I'd been punked at the end. That made me love it. That made me love it. That, and of course, Oscar Isaac, the star, who's just the most beautiful man.
He's kind of dreamy. Yeah.
I had never really clocked him before this movie, but now I was like, okay, you. Now I will remember your name.
And he's been in everything.
When he was a Russian museum security guard at Madonna's WWE.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that. Did not remember his name
the
at
husband
all.
And Drive. Right. You know,
exactly.
My number six was Short Term 12, which you still haven't seen, have you?
Nope, still haven't seen it.
Terrific movie with Brie Larson, who had a hell of a year, as a young woman who runs a... ward, I guess, for troubled youth who are currently, you know, being taken care of by the state, but while they are sort of transitioning either back home or out into society. And she's got troubles of her own. And her boyfriend is played by dude from Newsroom, whose name I'm currently forgetting.
Generic friendly bearded dude?
Yes, him. Yes. John something Jr. I remember I kept getting... emails about this movie, and I never quite grasped what it was. I thought, is this a collection of shorts? I didn't know. And then a friend of ours visited when Joe came, and he wanted to go see a movie, and I think there was a heat wave going on, and I just wanted to sit in air conditioning for 2 hours. It was the one thing I hadn't seen. We kind of went in blindly and blew us away, because it turns out Joe's a nurse, and so he's actually worked in a lot of similar care facilities, so he was having his own level of, you know, this movie's power, and I was just kind of blown away by her. All the performances are so good. A lot of the kids were unknowns, and they were terrific. And the movie has a really just kind of quiet strength and out of nowhere wit, you know, like at times you don't expect it, and just really packs a punch in a very understated, not sort of like, you know, bells and whistles kind of way. I really, really dug it.
I really agree. I hope that this is Brie Larson's year as much as it's Oscar Isaac's.
Yeah.
The Act of Killing.
Ah.
Yeah. Which we've talked about.
Yes.
Which
yes.
is, you know, about Indonesia and what would happen if the Nazis had won and everyone treated them like folk heroes.
And they got to make movies about themselves.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to seeing the longer version on the DVD that's coming out this week. It's like another 40 minutes. Because I admire a lot about Active Killing, but a lot of it I feel like is what I'm admiring is what the movie is setting out to do more than what it actually does. But I think part of that is I feel like, wait, why is that? You know, like there's a certain level of choppiness to that movie, and I'm hoping the longer one fills in those gaps, and so it feels less so. But it's an extraordinary movie, and people should totally see it.
Yeah, it absolutely blew me away. I mean, I like this sort of asks the question, what if you did something bad and your entire country treated you like a hero?
Yeah.
And you never got to actually say out loud. It's like you're an alcoholic who never got to go to the AA meeting.
Right.
Yeah, what if you lived in a society that totally enabled you? You know, it's sort of like, well, you know, what if you were Dick Cheney and you just couldn't travel to Europe anymore because they were going to arrest you for war crimes? But as long as you stayed in Wyoming, everything was great. Yeah, no, it's a dynamite movie. People should totally check it out.
And it's real pretty looking too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, some of the visual stuff that these guys come up with, these crazy drag musical numbers and stuff. You're like, what? Yeah, it's bananas. Number five.
So my number five was Frances Ha.
Yay!
And I was thinking actually while we were doing this that I need a time machine to go back like 5 years and tell me, who was writing the meanest review ever of Hannah Takes the Stairs, that someday you will put Greta Gerwig and Joe Swanberg on a top 10 list. I would have never believed it back then because I was mad at that movie.
Well, you know what? You might still hate Hannah Takes the Stairs. I think they have grown as artists probably, you know, and you weren't necessarily wrong the first time.
Exactly. But I loved Frances Ha. I mean, it's I almost have the hardest time explaining what that movie is even about. Just about woman finding herself in the world, which sounds like a movie I typically hate.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something so casually perfect about Greta Gerwig's acting. I've never seen anybody be as normal of a human being on screen as she is.
You're right. There is a sort of casual spontaneity there.
It's true. And I was dreading watching it. I actually put it off until like the very end of the year.
Oh, wow.
Because your friend, Christy Lemire, told me she watched Frances Ha and thought it was basically the story of my life. And I got incredibly scared of her. I thought, there's no way I'm going there.
I think it's about about your 20s being over. Because I have long felt that your 30s are all about the slow realization that your 20s, you were just a mess. You know, and that you made a lot of dumb mistakes, but at least with any luck, knock wood, you learned from them and didn't do them again.
I thought I nailed my 20s. Now I'm like, what?
My number five was All Is Lost, which I liked more than Gravity. I mean, like I super admire Gravity for its technical achievement and all the I mean, just the experience of watching it was extraordinary. But as far as one person desperately trying to survive, give me a non-verbal Robert Redford on the Indian Ocean anytime. That was one of the few movies this year where I literally moved up to the edge of my seat and kind of put my arms on the seat in front of me and just wanted my face more in the screen because I was so riveted by what was going on.
Like you were holding onto the seat ahead of you as though it was a life preserver?
Kind of, yes. It turns out it's not a flotation device. No, I found it captivating, and I think I am so now really excited about J.C. Shandor, who wrote and directed this. You know, his first film was Margin Call, which I liked, and couldn't be more different than this. I mean, big cast, tons of talk about, you know, financial, you know, markets and whatever. And here you've got one guy, almost no dialogue, just Robert Redford acting the hell out of this. And Redford was in one of the worst movies of this year, The Company You Keep. But then turned it around and was
so
great.
Which one was that?
Remember, with the Shia LaBeouf and he's the old radical on the run and Julie Christie.
Was that
this year? That was this year. I know. I thought that couldn't be this year. No, it was 2013.
That's a garbage movie.
That was awful, but he's so good in All Is Lost. So yeah, I was shocked at how much I loved that.
Beyond the Hills.
Mm.
See it? Did you see that?
Is it Christian Mungiu?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Romanian guy, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. About two women, they grew up in the same orphanage.
One has joined a convent of sorts.
One has joined sort of a convent. It's sort of like a religious community where the women all report to one dude and they are separated from the world and they wear the same sort of shroudy, you know, uniform and they shovel things and they bake the bread and, you know, it's like
and, woman's place in the world.
And it's always cold.
And but her friend has gone off into the world. And during their childhood, the friend was always the other one's protector.
Right.
Because she was big and tough and strong and in love with her. Uh-huh. And so she comes to the convent to get her.
To take her away.
And remove her from this, like, constricted environment. And then everything goes horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Because they sort of keep her and then they try to perform an exorcism on her.
On her or on the friend?
On the on the on the on the on the friend.
Yeah.
I mean, on the not on the friend, no,
on the woman who lives there.
On the woman. No, no, no. On the visiting lesbian.
That's what I'm saying. On the friend. Yeah.
And so, so it's this amazing, dark, you know, film about women in incredibly deep trouble in environments that are not of their creation, being controlled by, you know, structures they didn't make, and how they try to break out of it, and maybe they can and maybe they can't.
So it's a feel-good movie.
Yeah.
I don't like feel-good movies.
I know. I
like feel really bad
movies. I had a hard time even sort of, I think I wound up not writing a review of it because I couldn't even put into words what was going on in this movie. It's
devastating.
It's super powerful. I mean, you know, 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days was my, or backwards, whatever, however that was my favorite movie of that year. And this is not the same kind of intense, but it definitely is just like, there's so much going on, and it's really, really powerful.
So great.
Yeah. Number four.
My number four is Pain and Gain.
Okay. I didn't see Pain and Gain, but
I know
I need to, and I'm not judging you for having put it there, but everyone else is. So I know our listeners will want to know what you're thinking.
I haven't gone back to look at my review. I just remember not liking it, and I have forgotten everything else about it. So you are officially right about Pain and Gain in this context right now. So tell us.
Okay, I will. I will. I think that Pain and Gain does everything that Wolf of Wall Street tried to do, but better.
Audacious.
Audacious. Whoa. I do love it.
Bam.
If you're looking for a comedy where the moral grounds are high and low, where you can't tell who's right and wrong, where you love and hate everybody at once, that's also funny, that also captures a real specific time and place, Pain and Gain has that. You got your neon biker shorts. You have Mark Wahlberg and The Rock, and you have Anthony Mackie, who are hilarious guys that you love and you care about, but they're also doing terrible things. And you have, at least in this one, as opposed to Wolf of Wall Street, you see who the victim is, who is Tony Shalhoub.
Right.
And then you see that you don't necessarily like or care about him also that much. I mean, I think that there are some scenes in Pain and Gain that are some of the most excruciating ones I've had to watch all year. Because I love films where guys that you like and guys that you do want to root for, You watch them make one bad decision that turns into a series of them. Because I do believe that all of us are one bad decision away from starting a chain reaction that will wind up with us in prison. I like that.
Okay. Now, how is your take on Michael Bay's oeuvre been up until now? Have you liked any of his other stuff? Or?
Oh, well, Transformers is a masterpiece. No, it's not. No. No, but what I like about Michael Bay is I think he's a director with ambition and personality. Mm. And I think his Transformers films have more ambition and not as much personality. This one, I think, is a good synergy of the two.
Hmm.
I mean, and what this film has to say about the American dream is really smart, because this is a film where all of these, you know, sort of low-tier bodybuilders, people working paycheck to paycheck, they look at people who are living the American dream and they want it. And you see that they don't, like, they're not smart enough to understand what they're doing wrong. And maybe they're not doing anything wrong. Maybe the world's just unfair.
Hmm.
And the way they try to settle the score is dark and funny, and it's based on a true story. So what's not to love?
All right. Now, the one, I mean, again, I didn't see it, so I'm not...
I gotta rewatch now.
But from...
Spandex biker shorts.
The thing that came up in a lot of reviews that didn't like it was they said that it was... that Bay was being condescending against, like, you know, regular folks. Was that your read or no?
No, I wouldn't say so. I'd say that they're sort of comic tragic characters.
Hmm.
Kind of like the ones Shakespeare used to do.
Ew.
What?
All right. So better than Scorsese and as good as Shakespeare. You heard it here first.
Exactly. Pain and Gain.
Okay. My number four was Upstream Color, which we've talked about a ton on this show. So what was yours?
Leviathan.
Which I didn't see. Matt Singer, strangely, was just saying on Film Spotting SVU that he was not a fan, that he loved Sweetgrass. But he did
not
say,
my problem.
He said
Matt Singer. I don't even know the dude.
He's a good guy. You'd
he's
like
good
him.
At karaoke.
He said that. yeah, that's what I hear. That he needed.
I'm not saying who's Matt Singer. I know who he is.
He said he wanted.
We just don't know each other.
He said he would maybe want to watch it again.
I wasn't throwing shit.
I know.
Promise that.
He said he wanted to watch it again, projected, because he was watching it at home on Blu-ray. But that he just kind of felt like that it was not as sort of consuming the way that that Sweetgrass was, and that it all just kind of felt sort of random and thrown together.
I will not. I will say that it was as consuming as Sweetgrass.
Okay.
And
I didn't see it.
So. And definitely harrowing to watch. Mm. It was very sort of like unhappy situation on this.
Really,
fishing,
it was unhappy, and you liked it.
Fishing boat.
Shocker.
Shut up.
Everything felt again, my favorite Claire Denis adjective, doomed on this boat. It made you feel like the commercial fishing is the worst job in the world, that you should never eat another fish, and
and put these guys out of work? Is that what you want?
Yes. No. But here's mostly my feeling about it. It's so magnificently beautiful. It's so just intoxicatingly dark and wet, and everything on screen is gorgeous to look at, and it's a fishing boat, which is kind of crazy.
Sweetgrass was a bunch of sheep, so gorgeous.
No, I'm a big fan of these guys. I like Sweetgrass is great too.
Okay, all right. I need to watch this one. Number three, Amy.
My number three was Nebraska by Alexander Payne.
Yay.
I have to tell you guys something about myself. I know that I kind of pass myself off like we're all from Texas. But before that,
I'm not. But go on.
You're not. I think of it as a Texas dude.
No, I moved there after college.
Oh, late bloomer.
Grew up in Georgia.
He found the love of his life in Texas,
and then dragged him away so that I might never have to return.
Well, my family is mainly in Michigan. And Nebraska and Michigan are a couple of states apart, but there's something about this film that just really hit home about my family and about pretty much the families of everybody I saw around this film.
Texas is exactly the same way.
Texas is exactly the same way.
You've been in that living room with people staring at the TV set?
I have been. I have done that thing where you fly all the way home to see your relatives and end up watching Lifetime movies and not talking to each other.
Right.
Yeah, there's something about Alexander Payne where I think he just really nails, like, the awkwardness of human interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And people also made the same critique about this, that it was condescending, but I don't find his films condescending.
Oh, yeah,
I totally
agree with you. That was,
I don't think they are either.
It felt very really, firsthand and affectionate, if anything.
Affectionate is exactly the right word. It felt like he loved these people for their faults that he is gently teasing.
Yes.
Exactly. It just really struck me. I thought it was beautiful. And also, can we just get a shout out here for
June Squibb.
Actually, she was my least favorite part of the movie.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say for Will Forte, who showed that he has the most amazing range to go from MacGruber to this.
No.
And I love MacGruber.
I love MacGruber too. And I'm very excited to see where Will Forte goes next, because he can, he's a utility player now. He can be funny guy, but he can also be drama guy. Yep. At least he's, people say that the key to acting is listening. He does a lot of listening in this movie and a lot of very subtle reacting, and totally holds his own with a very strong cast. And yeah, he's dynamite.
I agree. I mean, maybe it's just the black and white, but I thought he had the most perfect little Buster Keaton face in this movie.
My number, three, is The Great Beauty. Huh? Did you see it? Oh my God, it's so good. It's showing up the street at the Sundance.
I still haven't seen it either. And he reminds me on a daily basis. That I have not yet seen.
Not every day, but...
Kind of every day.
Well, because the thing is...
I wake you up in the morning, I say, it's 7 o'clock, it's time to get up, and you say, why have you not yet seen The Great Beauty?
It's true, every morning. Because we have a screener, but I really want you to see it on the big screen, because it's...
I know, it's gorgeous. I know.
I'm telling the listeners this.
They know.
Anyway, I've talked about it recently on the show, but it's a movie about an older guy. It's very, La Dolce Vita-esque in a lot of ways. It's about an older guy who sort of squandered his youthful promise and as a writer, and now does a lot of like vapid celebrity journalism. But it's about Rome, and it's about life choices, and it's about just everything, and it's so gorgeous and smart and compelling and moving, and I adored it.
The Source Family.
Ah, yes. Great documentary.
Not unhappy.
No, actually.
Well, I mean, bad things happen to moments, people. But the people who came out the other side are like, yeah, I'm still a hippie, man.
We all have free love. We all have adjoining land in Hawaii.
That's right. Yeah.
Do you know what we do about this movie, maybe? Do you remember the Source restaurant when it was at Sunset and Sweetser? It's where Annie and Albie break up at the end of Annie Hall.
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay. The Source was run by the Source family, which was this cult, basically.
Father God, it was a sex cult.
Really?
Yeah.
More or less.
Basically.
He had 13 wives, walked around.
I feel like if you let any cult marinate long enough, it becomes a sex cult.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And what's the point of having a cult if you're not going to get laid all the time?
And they put out a bunch of albums.
What? Really groovy psychedelic music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Is the it women music all... to make love to?
If you're...
With 13
If you're wives. Rad, yeah.
Tell me about this film.
So Father Yod, he this big strapping businessman guy, grew his hair
Navy
all
veteran,
long,
you know.
Grew his hair long, this big long white beard. He looked like God, and he walked around in robes, and all his women had on like glamorous sort of like halter maxi dresses all the time, and you know, he put babies in all of them, and they
would buy like ever larger houses that they would all live in, and eventually they all went to Hawaii, and that was kind of a disaster.
They ran the health food restaurant, and then, you know, there was dissension in the ranks one by one. People were sort of like, I'm not down for this anymore, and they left or whatever.
Yeah, they'd get high every day.
They got high all the time. He started thinking he really was God. He was going to fly, and that didn't work. And the documentary is just so, like, it takes a situation that could have turned Jim Jones real quickly and just sort of petered out and broke up. And
with a whimper, not a bang.
Yeah, and the people involved, some of them are sort of, you know, obviously, you know.
Some of them are bitter, but some of them aren't.
One of his former wives, is the archivist of the group still, and she has reunions with them.
Yeah,
she was at the screening.
Yeah, she put out this whole book about it. Yes. And a bunch of them, like I said, do own adjoining property in Hawaii now where
still.
They like farm. Yes, yeah, it's crazy. It's streaming on Amazon. I think it's on DVD. You should totally check it out.
I will definitely check this out.
It's fascinating. You'll really love
this
movie.
Yeah, you'll dig it.
Wait, am I going to sell everything I own and find a father, daddy, God? Man,
that's
I don't
not
know.
Our call.
You know what, Father Yod? Father Yod is pretty sexy. Like I can see the appeal.
He's no Nick Frost from whatever.
There's no Nick Frost.
He has cult leader charisma, faux show.
No Alonzo Duralde for that matter.
That's right. If I could bottle it, you know. All right, number two.
My number two was Her, which I loved to pieces.
That's a movie that I it was in my top 25, and I suspect as years go by, it will mean more and more to me. But
it'll be a stealth bomb.
Yeah. But I really did think it's my favorite Spike Jonze movie to date, for sure.
I really like Spike Jonze. I like any director who can take normal life and just kick it up half an inch, you know, and just and make it sort of a parable without having to go overboard with it.
Yeah.
I thought it was a beautiful film. I thought that watching Joaquin Phoenix play a normal person
always a challenge, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought he really played it off beautifully.
And I think it's really hard to do a little bit of the future. Like, just a little, just a scooch into the future. And
I like this future. Los Angeles looks clean.
Yes.
And there's a subway that goes
to
everywhere.
To the beach.
Yeah, everybody gets to take the subway everywhere, including the beach.
Yeah, where you don't see a single car.
Yeah, there are no cars.
It's true, people walk places.
Pants are high-waisted.
Yeah,
it
was a future that sort of reminded me, although completely different, of Looper, where they're like, the way we make something look like the near future is we don't make space-age cars. We have our same old cars that are just really beaten up because we're still driving them. You still see, like, old Volkswagen Bugs on the street today.
True, true.
I thought that was really smart.
Yeah.
My number two was American Hustle.
Ooh,
Are you not a fan? Okay.
Not a fan.
Well, excuse
Go
me,
on.
Miss Payne and Gain. I thought this movie was so exciting because it's just, you know, I really admire a tightrope act. And when a film decides, okay, we're going to have four narrators now, I'm thinking, okay, at some point this is going to fall apart and you were going to, like, hit the ground. And it never did. It stayed on the high wire, and I was constantly... I was in the whole time. People talk about how it's meandering or it's this or that. I think it's a dense and convoluted plot, and it changes genres back and forth, but it does so very skillfully and craftily and intentionally. And I love the performances. I loved I loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it.
I think if there's a film definition of hot mess, it would be American
Hustle. No, I disagree. I think it's too structurally sound to be a hot mess.
I like a hot mess.
No, me too, but I wouldn't put this movie in that category, though.
Are we done with that?
What's your two?
A Touch of Sin.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Everything, I'll butcher his name here, Jia Zhangke. Everything he does is great. Every single thing he does.
I did not love The World.
That's because which you're, is the that's only, because you're wrong.
Which is the only one that I've tried to watch, but I really, now that I am such a fan of this one, I'm going to go back and try some other ones.
All your ideas about everything are wrong.
Including marrying you.
You know what I forgot? I forgot her. I screwed up because I left her out.
I was going to say, I thought you were berating me for Touch of Sin not being my number one, and you just put it at your number two.
I forgot her, but we already talked about it. So. Okay, fine. Her was like eight or something.
Okay, so Touch of Sin was your number one.
Alphabetically. Yeah. After A Touch of Sin, everything's up.
Right. I think hers is the biggest film you had on your list.
Yeah. Well, this was The Village Voice list.
This was his.
Where I intentionally went small.
Yeah.
And then, you know.
Wait, my paper doesn't deserve the best?
Because I love Gravity a lot. And Frozen. And I like, you know.
No, I kind of did the same thing with The Village Voice.
Where Fast and Furious
for my,
6.
For my,
loved that.
For
you know.
my
those were really cheerful movies.
My worst film, rather than go with the one that I had put on the wrap, my worst one that I put it for The Village Voice poll was Afternoon Delight, just because I wanted it to get at least one vote, because God, I hated that movie.
I think I just put Live Free or Die Hard.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, that's like you take
too.
A movie that, you know, gets everything wrong about who John McClane is.
Yes, no question.
It's like made by somebody who never saw Die Hard.
Yes, totally. All right, what was your number one?
My number one, we touched on. It was The Act of Killing.
Ah, okay. Good choice.
Beautiful film, and I think that's a film that is just monumental in what it achieves.
Sorry, just bang my mic.
No, I think it's
turning on lights.
It's definitely a movie that will mean a lot in a lot of ways. And like I said, I really want to see the longer version to see if it's more sort of structurally sound. But I totally admire what he was setting out to do, and to some extent, what he accomplishes. So yeah, no, it's great. My number one is Francis Ha.
Really?
Yes. But my actual worst film that I put for the wrap was Grown Ups 2, because holy crap.
Yeah.
That was just suffering to sit through that thing. And for a movie to be against bullying and participating in bullying at the same time, just give me a break.
Against bullying is so trendy.
Which is fine, but then don't berate like all the characters in the movie that are either like effeminate men or masculine women. I mean, Adam Sandler is such a creep about that stuff. It drives me nuts.
My favorite movie-going experience of the year was Madea Christmas with you and our friends.
And the two Long Island iced teas I had to have before.
Like, I figured out that Adam Sandler actually keeps Nick Swartzen around as a literal whipping boy.
I think that's why he's an existent person. But you know what was kind of beautiful about our top 10 list that we just did?
What's that?
We barely agreed, but yet nobody has a black eye.
That's because
we're not on the internet.
As a thing, I have a thing in my life that I refuse to argue about movies.
I like that.
I'm not into it.
Yeah.
I've
given up on it. Because I don't like people trying to change my mind, so I don't try to change other people's.
I worked in little indie record shops back in Texas for 12 years. And during that time, what I learned was I can't make people stop liking Primus. Or Depeche Mode. Or whatever. Like, I can say to them all day long, dude, this new Pavement record is real good. And they'll be like, meh, Primus. All right, Primus, here, knock yourself out. Enjoy Primus. It's great. I'm happy to take your money. Have the Primus record. You never convince anyone of anything. You especially never convince anyone of anything whose job it is to have an opinion.
Yeah, totally.
All you do is, and especially now, like maybe back in the day it was a little more, I don't know, maybe it wasn't more civil. But now it's this endless sniping on Twitter or Facebook with other film critics. And who was it that just recently said it's all about them film critics standing around measuring each other's dicks all the time?
That's, I forget, yeah.
Yeah, it's this endless sort of like...
Really? You like that?
One-upsmanship, like, oh, your taste is suspect now.
One of my favorite
moments. When in reality, it's just, I don't care. I really don't care.
One of my favorite moments in the new Paranormal Activity movie is when they post that YouTube clip. They're like, man, these comments are so mean.
Everyone's so mean. And it's not that I have a problem with meanness. It's just that I have a problem with
petty.
With petty bickering about every damn thing.
It's true. And it's
I have fun arguing with him on this show. But that's because I know we're going to have a lovely dinner afterwards. You know, I mean, like, that's not even, it's not even an argument. A real one, anyway. But these guys, and it's always guys, it's these guys who are all like, well, you're a fool, you're an idiot.
There's no end game for these.
I don't have time. I really don't have time for this. Ever. So I just don't like to argue with people. You make me want to see Pain and Gain again, because I think I looked at it wrong, maybe now. Because you, I know, are smart and cool and awesome. And so, because I know this about you, it makes me want to see this movie again now.
And because we're both Team Walter Mitty. There must be some brains that we share. Also, we're Team Walter
Mitty. Yeah.
My favorite Walter Mitty discussion was when Amy and I were on the lunch before we started. And James Rocky said something, slamming it. And she said, Amy goes, but it's a beautiful postcard. And James says, with nothing written on the back. I was like, we're done here.
Well, guys, I hope our 2014 is a peaceful year for film critics.
Absolutely.
And we don't have to draw blood.
And let it
other.
Begin with me. Let's see. Okay, so DVD. I don't know.
Let it begin with me.
I don't know where that came from.
You don't mean that at all.
I don't. By kidding. All right. My DVD pick this week is a movie that a lot of critics went out of their way to poop on in their worst list, but I thought was a lot of fun, even if it wasn't on anywhere near my best list. Pedro Almodovar's I'm So Excited. A very silly romp, which I'm sure if I had just made The Skin I Live In, I'd feel like making too.
Had a lot of semen in it. That was funny.
Yeehaw.
Good Burger's streaming on Netflix now, so that's my pick. Good Burger's good.
Amy, you want to
I wasn't prepared for this, but I found out yesterday that Days of Thunder is streaming on Netflix now.
Okay, well, we'll post links to all of those.
I'm going to watch that.
Yeah, it's terrible, but if you want to see Nicole Kidman with her original hair.
Oh, no, that's right.
Yeah. I like that old hair. I like that old red curly hair. 21-year-old
Nicole Kidman pretending she's an American neurosurgeon.
Brain surgeon. Yes. Oh, God, Days of Thunder. Okay.
Wrap it up.
What about letters?
We've gone so long. Let's just do letters next week.
All right. Well, next week's going to be long, too, probably.
Well, we'll just sit on them then for a bit.
All right. Okay. People sent us their favorites of 2013.
We'll get to them. It'll still be January.
You're right. All right.
Everybody calm down.
Fine. Letter writers. You have Dave White to blame.
We're not letter ignoring not getting on you. This week's show. We're just making you wait a little bit.
As always, we thank
Let's
you for listening.
Let's wait a while.
Okay, fine. Check out ChrissyLemire.com.
Before we go too far.
Check out Rotten Tomatoes Radio with Gray Drake and Matt Atchity. Also, of course, if you are a SiriusXM subscriber, listen to The Frank DeCaro Show and to Derek and Romaine, where Dave and I appear on about a monthly basis or so.
And argue with Romaine.
Yes, which is, yes. Oh, man, that was a doozy.
I can't wait to argue with Romaine some more.
That will be fun.
Next
I can't
time.
Wait. Let's see. There is, shockingly, a new episode of Cooking with Malcolm Ingram. So go check that out.
I know I just said I don't like to argue with people, but I love arguing with Romaine now. It's my new favorite thing.
She makes it a joy. also check out the Criterion cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack with our friend Jack Morrissey, the Schmoes Know podcast, the B-Movies podcast, Film Spotting, SVU, Podcrash, The Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and, of course, The Lunch. You can subscribe to this show on iTunes, and some people have been leaving positive reviews, which is great. We really appreciate it. The more positive reviews we get, the better placement we get on the iTunes podcast page.
Yep.
And you know what? There are a lot of podcasts out there, and we need the exposure. And our numbers are climbing for some crazy reason.
It's because we are the best.
We have no idea what that's about, but whatever it is you're doing out there, do more of it, people. We love you. You can stream this show on Stitcher Radio or at thelounge.com. You can like our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. You can follow us at Twitter at LinoleumCast.
You can buy a T-shirt. We have two left.
Yes.
One XL and one double XL. You can buy the remaining two copies of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas and get the jump on your 2014 Christmas. Christmas movie watching season.
And you could even still get our commentary track for White Christmas, even though you don't want it right now.
Yeah, there'll be another commentary coming this month.
Yes. Yeah. But drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com to find out about ordering our goodies. You can also send us lists that Dave may or may not decide we have time to read, and any questions or comments you have about the show.
I shall be final arbiter.
You can check into the show at getglue.com. Amy, where can people find you on
That's right. That was my concern.
Where do we find
Amy Nicholson?
I guess the most consistent place to find me would be laweekly.com or at my Twitter, which is at the Amy Nicholson.
We'll post that on all of our places.
Spelled just like Jack.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you again for coming in.
You're so great.
This was super fun. Thanks for having me.
Ringing out 2013 for us on this first week of January.
I have a new documentary.
Oh?
Yeah, I made it.
Uh-huh.
It's called Interior Cookie Kitchen.
Next week's show is going to be super awesome and exciting.
And probably just as long.
Like this one. Joining us will be two people who've been on the show before, who have been some of our best guests. And
I know the anti-guest people are getting tired of us right now because we've had a guest last week and a guest this week, and we're going to have two next week.
But we have a new mixing board!
After that, yeah, the new mixing board has got us going guest crazy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the week after that, I'm in Sundance, but hopefully by then I will have taught Dave White how to put this equipment.
You will. I'm going to learn himself, things.
Which
I'm learning
super
things.
Exciting.
Every day I learn something new.
Anyway, so next week, Manola Dargis of the New York Times and Robert Abley of the LA Times will be with us. All the times. We'll be talking more about 2013 in review, the underrated movies, the overrated movies.
The medium-rated movies.
The medium-rated movies.
The just-rated right enough movies.
The trends we can't wait to go away. All the other stuff that we haven't dredged up yet about the year just passed. Because it's January, and there's only so much we can talk about Hercules, so that's how it rolls. Anyway,
I suspect there's going to be a lot of things we have to say about Hercules.
Could be.
It's Hercules.
Look at this one. Look at that one. As always, thank you for listening. We will catch you next time.
Goodbye.